The Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
And welcome back to Rosie on the House, where we have two special guests here in studio. Mrs. Michelle DeMuro, Executive Director of the Veterans Heritage Project, and special guest, Colonel, United States Air Force Colonel Thomas H. Kirk, who I promised you would tell a great story, your life in service in the Air Force.
Well, thank you, Rosie. I think what you're talking about is telling me the dark days of my life. I was a squadron commander, a young lieutenant colonel, 38 years old, in Thailand, based in Thailand, flying just about every other day into the area around Hanoi, North Vietnam.
And this is
in 1967.
Okay, all right.
I'm 38 years old. I have 66 missions, and this particular day I'm slated to lead the largest fighter bomber raid of the war to that time. We combined two bases to get us 48 F-105 dive bombers, the principal dive bomber in Vietnam. And we're going up to bomb the Tom Kirk Memorial Bridge in downtown Hanoi. It's 7:30 in the morning, and we are right over there, right over the city, and I call the roll in, and all 48 airplanes roll in, dive down on the target to drop our bombs. Halfway down the bomb run in this dive, I struck with that aircraft fire, set the airplane on fire, and I knew that I wasn't going to make it home because I was burning already. Dropped my bombs, then pulled off, and I had one goal in life. I try to get 25 or 30 miles due south of Hanoi into the jungle where helicopters could come and pick us up. If you went down anywhere around Hanoi within about 30 miles, they didn't even come up there. It was too dangerous.
Wow.
So I'm trying to do this, and I told you I had that airplane doing over 600 miles an hour, and I'm climbing out, trying, and I'm on fire, and I know I'm not going to make it, but I'm hoping I can get 30 or 40 miles into the jungle. And as luck would have it, it didn't. The flight controls, which are all hydraulic, burned through. The airplane just went, we call it a tuck, went straight nose down to the ground. And I had no time to think, just jump out.
And you do that at a couple hundred miles an hour?
600 miles an hour. And squeeze the triggers on the armrest, and the canopy comes off, and you're blown out of the airplane about 65 feet in the air. I did that, and that knocked me unconscious. All automatic. Once you go out of the airplane, the seat separates, and then the parachute automatically deploys, and you float down. That's good because I actually landed unconscious. If I hadn't, if I hadn't gotten the parachute, I wouldn't be here. Then I landed in a plowed field, 28 miles outside of Hanoi, captured by Vietnamese men, women, and children who just beat me black and blue, and it would have killed me if I'd been there 5 minutes longer, but I heard some rifle shots in the air, and the people backed away, and I was taken prisoner. I was carried into what we call it, the Hanoi Hilton in downtown, left blindfolded, bound, and gagged, lying on a stretcher all day, and it happened at 7:30 in the morning, so I know it was all day. That night, they took me upstairs into I guess it was a small hospital, untied me. A Vietnamese doctor looked at me and says, "Kirk, you're very badly injured. You'll probably die." And he took me out and tied me back. Didn't do a thing. I didn't even get an aspirin. And he left me alone for about 2 days. Then he took me in for interrogation. And at that time, they had to carry me. I couldn't walk for 2 months because of landing in unconscious, banged my legs up. They untied me, and I couldn't walk, so they sat me on the floor and propped me up with a box behind my back. And the first words out of that guy's mouth was, "Kirk, you are not a prisoner of war. You're a war criminal. You've committed crimes against the Vietnamese. You'll be tried and most probably shot. Now answer all of our questions." Every military guy knows you give name, rank, serial number, date of birth if you're captured, nothing else to your best of your ability. Well, I did that. They wouldn't accept it, and they kept trying to get me to answer, and I wouldn't answer questions. And the guy says, "Kirk, it's going to be very difficult for you here. You're very stupid." And they got up and left. I thought, well, this isn't so bad. I can handle this. Pretty soon the door opened. The biggest man I ever saw in Vietnam, who was a torture expert, came in. And they tied me up with ropes and so forth in a way that I haven't got time to describe and left me lying there on the floor, completely tied up, gagged, and for I don't know how long. Then they came back in and completely untied me and then asked me, was I ready to answer the questions? And I said no, and I went through 3 days and nights of this. On the fourth morning, when they came in, I was a vegetable. I mean, I was so far gone from, there's nothing in my life or anybody's life worse than unremitting pain. And that's what it was. And I had gone so far, I was like an animal. And when they untied me, I broke. I have no idea to this day what I said, but I gave them something. I don't know what, I'll always hate that, but I gave them something. Then they put me into a cell by myself. If you can picture a 6-foot by 7-foot masonry cell, haven't seen another soul, by myself for the first time, not tied up, just sitting there on a bunk. And I'm thinking, I want to die. If you can picture, it's the most terrible thing I can ever think of in my life. Picture, I'm 38 years old. I'm at the top of my game. I've done what I'm trained to do. I'm leading a squadron, flying combat. I'm shot down, very badly injured, got out of the parachute. No one saw me get down. They didn't know whether I was alive or dead for 3 years. I'm captured and put into the prison camp, tortured, and failed. And I absolutely wanted to die, but didn't have a choice. They wouldn't let us die. So I dealt with that. And the days went by, and perhaps every 5 minutes, I would say, why me, God? What did I do? Is there anything I could have done with that airplane? Why did this have to happen? Why did that shell hit me? Why? And I think something that almost everybody goes through in a situation like that. And then one morning, and I don't know exactly when, I got up and I stomped my foot on the ground. I said, by God, I've got to dig deep. I've got to figure out some way to deal with this and get my spirits up and make myself determine I'm going home someday. And as God is my witness, from that day on, I did fine in the prison camp. I had just made a commitment to myself that I wasn't going to give in. I wasn't going to feel bad. I was going to do my best to fight my way through that battle to come home someday. And I could tell you stories for hours of cowardice, bravery, frustration, torture, and things. But it wouldn't matter. If you think about a 6-by-7-foot masonry cell with a wooden door, never unlocked, and there's a little hole in the door so they can look in at you. They give you 2 bowls of soup, a little bowl of soup in the morning, a bowl of soup in the afternoon. That's all the food you get. And I went down 180 pounds, and I got down to 90 pounds in the camp. After 28 days of by myself, I really began to pull myself together. And one evening, they came in and took me out and walked me down the corridor. And as the first 3 people I'd ever seen, Americans, three guys sitting on a board in a cell, in a room, with their back to me, and he carried me and sat down. And the 4 of us lived together for 14 months. 3 Navy guys, of all things.
What's the key to being in a 6-foot by 7-foot concrete prison cube for 28 days, hungry, hurt, tortured? What's the key to flipping the switch from negative to positive?
Being an American, that's a simple answer. I can't imagine how somebody from, we had some guys up there from Thailand, we had guys from Australia, we had from all over, but there's something in us, and I talk about it any time I make. I talk about when times get hard, you lose a husband or a wife or a child. God gives us, every human being, the ability to deal with a situation, and you never lose a love, but you get to get over it. And you've got to go forward. You can't collapse and try to live in the past or live in hurt, live in pain. You've got to dig deep and find within you what we as Americans and our freedom and our way of life is. We have strength that we don't even realize, that you dig down and you find it's there. And it's true. Absolutely, with everybody I knew, I feel the same way about it. Because I was certainly nobody special. I was just a guy who happened to be hit with the golden BB, we used to call it.
Wow.
Anyway.
Well, I'm kind of a math guy, and you're in an F-105. I want to find out why they called them the thuds. You're in an F-105. Diving in, carrying your moms, traveling 600 miles an hour, and the anti-aircraft Magic BB takes your tail off. Had they pulled the trigger a nanosecond sooner, or you've been
later,
traveling 5 miles an hour slower?
Oh, 10 feet left. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it have been any different? Because every single day that you're up there was four times worse than the biggest fireworks display you've ever seen in your life. And it's all coming by you. Just aimed at you, coming by you, aimed at every individual airplane. And you think, my God, how do we get through it? And you pull off, and you pull in, and you get back to about 10,000 feet, and you, whew, God, we made another one.
I've got to ask one question. Before you reach down to the seat and pull those ejection triggers, is there one universal pilot prayer you say before you squeeze those triggers?
No, it's not a universal pilot prayer. It's OS, you know, O. I'm not going to say the word. and then you squeeze the triggers. And then on the way down in the parachute, you say a little prayer.
Then you're saying prayer.
If you're awake, but I wasn't awake. Anyway, so.
Well, we've only met. But I know a lot of veterans. But I'll tell you what. I can see in your eyes. I can hear in your voice. Having known what you've gone through, you don't have like 1 ounce of self-pity.
Oh, no. One of my cellmates, a Navy guy who just died recently, told me one day, says, quit bitching about being in here. If you can't take a joke, you shouldn't have joined up. I said, that's a pretty heavy joke. Well, that's true. No, it was a terrible experience, but we were pretty happy when we found that way. But life didn't change.
You survived five years.
I was with those four guys I told you about in the first cell, and we got caught after about 14 months. We had a rhubarb. And we got separated, and I was put in solitary for nearly 2 years. And that was
in a 6x7 concrete.
Right. And no, never out of the cell, except to go out 5 minutes a day, throw a little water in your face, and dump your toilet bucket and go back in. Nothing to read, nothing to write, nothing to do but sit there for 5.5 years.
How do you save yourself from that?
You come up with a complete routine. Like you go to work in the morning, you exercise. I used to walk 4.5 miles a day in the cell, 3.5 steps each way. And I played flute when I was younger, flute and clarinet. I said, you know, and I got a little stick about that long, and I would do hours every day of technical exercises like I was playing my flute. And I could do anything I wanted to do to pass the time, because you got to have a routine or you go nuts.
All right. You've been listening to the story of United States Air Force Colonel Thomas H. Kirk, who happens to be the Storyteller Award recipient for the Veterans Heritage Project, who have a banquet coming up Saturday, March 7th. And the number one auction item available, or the premier auction item available at that banquet, is a private dinner with Colonel Kirk and his wife. And is there a time limit? I mean, You're used to spending 2.5 years in solitary confinement. If I bid on that dinner, can we make it last like about a week?
No. You've had plenty to do without listening to me for a week, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's been an honor listening to you in this past hour. Again, a salute, my hat's off, my hand over my heart for you and those like you who have served what is the greatest country in the history of mankind, the United States of America.
Amen.